The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the 06010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus.
Hello and welcome in. Fantasy Focus Football Podcast on YouTube. Me, Field Yates, hanging out with my best friend, Matthew Berry. And you know what stinks, Matthew? We have not had any news in the NFL recently. I mean, seriously, can we get, like, I would take a seventh-round draft pick trade. Is that too much to ask for?
Thank God. Listen, the NFL is great year-round, but I have to tell you, like, has there been any more of a godsend, at least for us in sports media, than NFL free agency, as, you know, people are quarantined or at least staying at home, hopefully staying safe. And, you know, there's a lot of depressing news out there in terms of real world stuff. But at least in our little world, we've got lots and lots and lots of stuff to talk about. Even in what we expected to be a crazy free agency period has gotten even crazier. And it starts down south.
That's right, Matthew. And we're going to get into as many of these free agency moves that have fantasy football relevance as we can. And let's begin right in Tampa Bay, the new home of Tom Brady. Still sounds a little bit weird to me. We each get three strikes on calling Tom Brady a Buccaneer. At that point, we get some sort of foul. I'm not sure what's, or the penalty. I'm not sure what that is. But Matthew, Tom Brady has gone to Tampa Bay. We know that that includes a cast of weapons led by Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and OJ Howard and Cameron Brate, if they decide to ever use the tight ends, a decent offensive line, perhaps some reinforcements at running back. All of that is pretty well known by now. Tom Brady was not a starting quarterback in fantasy football last year. Matthew, has the transition down south to the Buccaneers, where he pairs with Bruce Arians, put him right back in the top 10 fantasy quarterback land, space, grouping, whatever you want to call it?
I believe so. So you and I participated in a ESPN fantasy roundtable.
Yeah.
This is very upsetting. Did it just go dark for a second?
It just went dark. By the way, people are saying they don't want to see you, Matthew, but what you were saying was something about
Let me tell you, it's super annoying. What is happening here is, so I'm my daughter, and I'm using my iPad to do this, okay?
Okay.
And my daughter also has an iPad. And so her little friend in second grade also has an iPad. Now, I didn't give – my daughter doesn't have her own Apple ID, right? So she has to use mine. Like, so she borrows my iPad. So her little second grade friend is calling her on FaceTime. They call each other a bunch. And that's what's happening, is I have a second grader calling my second grader right now. And so I'm, like, declining it. That's what's actually happening, because I didn't text my 8-year-old to be like, you know, because I'm in a quiet location here, so I can't.
It's a weird time right now. It's a weird time all the way around. No doubt about that. All right, so Tom Brady, top 10, top 12 quarterback going forward, yay or nay?
Yeah. So yes, the answer is yes. As you and I did a roundtable with a bunch of our colleagues. And in that piece, and you can read it now on ESPN.com, where a bunch of us weighed in on sort of our thoughts on Brady to the Buccaneers. I ranked him initially as QB10. I did a video last night where I said I thought he was a top 12 guy. I did it sort of immediately. And then as I started going through and ranking, my initial ranks, when my QB ranks come out post-free agency, and it'll be like early next week, I'll have Tom Brady as my number 10 quarterback. And I think there's a lot of things here to be encouraged about, not just the insane upgrade in weapons that he'll have at his disposal. I mean, think about last year with the Patriots, when he was QB16 on a points per game basis. Last year, it was Julian Edelman was banged up. The Antonio Brown situation, that didn't work out. They tried to get in Mohamed Sanu towards the end. He got hurt. He was inconsistent. You know, like, N'Keal Harry missed half the season. Like, it was in and out of the, you know, Gronk retired. Like, Tom Brady's two best pass catchers last year that he trusted the most, Julian Edelman and James White, and all due respect to nice players, but this is a massive upgrade for Tom Brady in terms of his weapons. And also, by the way, it's as fantasy friendly an offense as there is in the NFL. Bruce Arians loves to throw. We know this. Think about Arizona when Arians was the coach there. Carson Palmer, towards the end of his NFL career, right? And he was in his mid to late 30s in Arizona, which is about what, you know, Tom Brady is in real life, right? I mean, Tom Brady's 43, but in Tom Brady years, it's probably about 35. In 2015, Carson Palmer's 35-year-old season, he was the fifth best quarterback in fantasy. He threw for over 4,000 yards in three of the four seasons he played under Arians in Arizona. The one year he didn't was 2014 when he got hurt early and missed the majority of the season. I am not concerned, Field, and I'm curious if you are, I am not concerned about the narrative that, oh, Brady can't throw deep anymore and all Arians loves to do is chuck it deep. Bruce, you don't bring in Tom Brady for $30 million a year and say, like, sorry, Tom, you're running our playbook. Bruce Arians and his staff will create plays that fit what Tom does well.
Yeah, they'll meet somewhere in the middle. It is interesting that we don't know how much time they'll have to actually practice before the games begin because of what's taking place in our world right now with the coronavirus. Obviously, the off-season work will be scaled back if Brady does decide to attend OTA, something he hasn't done in recent seasons with the Patriots. So a couple of thoughts here is that you're right. Decided upgrade in terms of pass catchers, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, perhaps the best duo of wide receivers in the NFL. Probably the reasons against Tom Brady being a top 10 quarterback. And my case was like, yeah, he can be a top 10 quarterback right now. If you look at the, you know, the available quarterbacks based off what we know of where they're going to be, it would be this. It would be that there are so many quarterbacks that can use their legs effectively that can create fantasy value in a way that Tom Brady just simply never will, right? Josh Allen with a lesser group of weapons and certainly a lesser arm in terms of sort of refined passing was what, quarterback six? We were talking about him yesterday during the podcast. Quarterback six last season, like the Lamar Jacksons are at the very top of the food chain in terms of fantasy output, but there are enough guys that are just good enough with their legs that can maybe push Tom Brady outside of the top 10. And then the other question would just be, I understand that this is a very risk it, no biscuit offense. Like they're not afraid to risk to throw caution to the wind. But the question is, will Tom Brady play the same style, or will, you know, is part of the reason why Jameis was so prolific last year in part because he was so careless too, right? They were constantly having to throw the football because he was putting them in bad spots with poor decisions. So those are probably the two cases against, but I don't have a major disagreement with Brady being a top 12 quarterback.
Look, I think you could nitpick him if you want to say he was, you know, 11th or 12th. You know, there's going to be a lot of guys that are sort of grouped in that area. But I went through the list here, and there's a couple of guys that are sort of in that right there that, like, I mean, Carson Wentz, Big Ben, when he, you know, assuming he comes back fully healthy, Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, they're all sort of right there in that range. I have Josh Allen ranked ahead of him. I have Lamar Jackson ranked ahead of him. I have Patrick Mahomes ranked ahead of him. I have Kyler Murray ranked ahead of him. But I'm just saying, you start getting down there and you're like, yeah, I mean, for all his 30 interceptions last year, Jameis Winston was still the fifth best quarterback in terms of total points. And I'm with you. They're not going to have to get into as many shootouts. We expect the defense to be better in Tampa Bay. And to your point, they're not going to have to be chasing. On the other hand, without the 30 interceptions, and Jameis also fumbled a decent amount, without that, you're looking at more sustained drives. You're looking at a more efficient offense. And also, Field, this is nothing I can quantify, okay? This is just a little bit of a gut call. But don't you think, you know, you think about Peyton Manning's first year. I believe it was his first year in Denver, 2013, right? That was his first year in Denver. That was the 50-touchdown season. I believe it was his first year.
Yep.
Peyton would love to do this thing where they would get down to, like, the 5-yard line, the 3-yard line, and he would always throw a touchdown. And I'm not saying he padded his stats. Peyton Manning is, you know, one of the all-time greats. But my point is if Tom Brady, who's never been kind of a numbers or a stats guy, if ever there was a year that he sort of wanted to prove it, that he's not, quote, a system quarterback, as he's been accused of by you know, crazy people.
By morons. That's who he's been accused
obviously,
of.
Obviously. I mean, you and I are on the same page. He is a first ballot unanimous Hall of Famer. He is the GOAT. Yeah. But what I'm just saying is that I don't think there's going to be a lot of rushing touchdowns here unless Tom keeps himself. I think Tom is going to – I don't want to say he's going to pad his stats, but I definitely think there is going to be a chip on his shoulder in a way that we probably haven't seen before with Tom Brady and wanting to prove all the doubters wrong, because there's certainly going to be a lot of them thinking that, you know, he's not going to be able to succeed away from Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots?
My guess is that most rational people aren't asking that many questions about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. I mean, there were wide receiver ones last year with Jameis Winston. If we're considering Tom Brady to be a comparable but certainly better passer, then like they should be locked in for their value there. I guess in New England, Matthew, we're a little bit in wait and see mode on the value of somebody like Julian Edelman, especially those who play in either keeper or dynasty league. A wide receiver one with Brady under center, his value could evolve depending on what the Patriots do at quarterback, understanding that right now Jared Stidham is their starter. And we don't know if there is a competition that's going to take place at any point between now and the start of the Patriots season. So Edelman stock down, I'm assuming, in your opinion?
Yeah. I had to let Cooper in. Sorry.
Yeah, Matthew had to walk over and get his dog back in. His dog was doing what dogs do. Dogs go and they bark at cars because dogs like to bark and dogs like to bark at cars. Hello, Cooper.
They had a field, Cooper. Anyway, so yeah, I think stock down for Julian Edelman. I don't care who they bring in at quarterback. Whoever they bring in is not going to have the same connection with Julian Edelman that Tom Brady did. I just don't see it. Again, you also, the other concerns with Edelman are always the injury history. He gets banged up. How much can he score and be used in the red zone, right? He's a guy who, for the majority of his career, his fantasy calling card has been volume, sure, right? It's in PPR. And so does he get that with a quarterback that's not looking for him as often as Tom Brady always did? And so Edelman's a great player. He'll ultimately be fine, but a guy that was a top 15-ish wide receiver last year, I think, is more likely a top 25, top 30 guy with a different quarterback. And honestly, you know, if it's Jared Stidham, we'll see who it's not going to be Stidham. But, you know what I mean? Like,
I bet it could be Stidham.
You think it could be? You think they go into the season with Stidham?
I think it's possible. Forever? You know, yeah, I think it's definitely possible. By the way, I think, like, where I feel pretty strongly about our analysis right now about the Bucs and their offense with Tom Brady under center, I don't know that we can fully evaluate the Patriots offense because we don't know for sure the quarterback will be, and certainly a lot of wrinkles that could be incorporated, added, subtracted there in New England. So more wait and see on the Patriots for the most part. Let's go to the Browns, Matthew, because they made a splash. You referenced this on the show yesterday.
Hey, two questions, boy. Before we move on to the Browns, I have two quick questions for you.
Okay.
So two quick questions. Question number one is, I think OJ Howard becomes a very interesting sleeper at the end of your draft. Do you think OJ Howard can be resurrected now with Tom Brady, who obviously has made tremendous use of his tight end throughout his career, most notably with Rob Gronkowski? And then secondly, you know, we talked about an over under. Well, answer that question first while I let Cooper out again. So answer the question about OJ Howard.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard for anybody to be a sleeper on this Bucs offense because it's going to be the most discussed team of the offseason. You signed Tom Brady. That's part of the territory. And I think that the people that might want to turn the corner on OJ Howard, the resistance might be that they've just been down that road too many times before, right? Volume should not have been an issue, and it was an issue. I understand that Tom Brady has had trusted tight ends in the past, but Bruce Arians, no matter where he has been, with great, great quarterbacks, you know, Carson Palmer was great for him during his time there in Arizona. It just never seemed to funnel to the tight end as frequently as you would have wanted it to.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I will say at the combine, I was talking to a Buccaneers offensive coach, and I sort of literally point blank said to him, like, OJ Howard, what happened last year? Like, you know, was he in the doghouse? And he just said, honestly, it was one of those weird things. He says, he wasn't in the doghouse. We all love the kid. He works his butt off. He's a great kid. We all really like him. It's just one of those things where the targets just weren't getting there, but none of us have lost faith in him. We think he is, you know, a tremendous athlete and a big part of what we want to do in the future. So for whatever that's worth as well, you know, I know the narrative out there sometimes is that OJ Howard was so quote unquote in the doghouse, but certainly not the case. At least from the conversations I've had. Second question for you here.
Yep.
Back when I was in Avengers Endgame, the most popular movie of all time, you know.
When did that happen?
Worldwide, yep. You and I did a poll on Twitter, and we said, hey, how often is Matthew allowed to bring up that he's a cast member of Avengers Endgame?
Oh, God.
Right? We did a whole poll. So my question to you is, how often am I allowed to bring up that on March 3rd in my post-NFL Combine column, I said Tom Brady to the Buccaneers, I said it on social media as well. I got all sorts of grief. And now, of course, Tom Brady's going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. How often am I allowed to bring up that and pat myself on the back for that one?
Yeah, go ahead. I think maybe until like the end of this podcast would be reasonable, but to each their own. We'll decide that one later. Let's talk about Austin Hooper, who now is in Cleveland. 4 years, $44 million for Hooper, richest contract for a tight end ever. This was the first deal that was agreed to during the legal negotiating window. Really strong play, obviously, financially for Austin Hooper, Matthew. The Browns kind of have what the Bucs have, right? And I'm not talking about Tom Brady. I'm talking about two great wide receivers and two significant investments in tight ends because they've got Hooper, $11 million per year, plus David Njoku, a first-round pick just a few years ago. Do we think that Austin Hooper has the chance to repeat his success from the last two seasons, because he was a lock-it-in tight end, you know, top 10 tight end for the past two seasons?
So the answer there is sort of.
Okay.
Do I think he – so it depends on how you define that question, right? Do I think he has a chance to repeat his success as a top 10 fantasy tight end? Absolutely. Talented guy. My expectation is the Browns offense as a whole will be a lot better. We've seen Kevin Stefanski use the tight end before. We saw it in Minnesota, obviously. And you don't sign Austin Hooper to that kind of money to not use him. So I expect Baker to be better. I expect the offense to be better. So I certainly think Hooper will be there. Do I think he's the number one tight end in fantasy, which is what he was in Atlanta last year before he got hurt? I don't. Again, because Baker Mayfield has liked to spread it around in his career. I expect and as of this moment, Odell Beckham Jr. is still on the Browns. Jarvis Landry is still on the Browns. David Njoku is still on the Browns. Kareem Hunt's still on the Browns. So they use a lot of the backfield. There's actually a lot of passing weapons here for Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. So I don't think he gets the kind of targets that he got in 2019. He got 96 targets for a Falcons team that was often trailing and throwing a lot. Super talented player, thrilled for him as a person. I think it's a great move for the Browns organization. NFL-wise, I think he's a top 10 fantasy tight end. I'm not convinced, however, that he's the number one tight end in fantasy, which he was last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably fair. I mean, Travis Kelce and certainly George Kittle and certainly Zach Ertz will always have a case going into the season to potentially be the top tight end in fantasy, but a strong move for Cleveland. Hooper is going to continue to be a big part of their offense, certainly under new head coach Kevin Stefanski, who we know had an affinity for tight ends during his play calling days in Minnesota. The other side of this, Matthew, is that the Falcons didn't wait long to pounce on a tight end to try to replace Austin Hooper. They traded for Hayden Hurst, a first round pick for the Ravens just a couple of years ago, the same year that Lamar Jackson was drafted, as a matter of fact. Hurst had 30 catches last year. Do you get the sense that Hurst has some untapped potential that could lead him to become a starting tight end in fantasy now that he plays for the Falcons?
I do. You know, I think people forget that Hayden Hurst, coming out of college, he was a first-round draft pick by the Baltimore Ravens, and he was drafted ahead of Mark Andrews. I believe he was a first-rounder. Maybe he'd been a second-rounder.
He was drafted ahead of Mark Andrews, Matthew. He was drafted ahead of Lamar Jackson.
Exactly.
He was the first-round pick for the Ravens that year.
Yeah, exactly. So, and by the way, no one knew what Lamar Jackson was going to become. But at the time, no one thought the post-draft analysis was that they thought Hayden Hurst would become the pass-catching tight end for the Ravens. He was a guy that was really productive in college, gets into Baltimore, starts off his career injured. And then, of course, Mark Andrews takes over last year. But very productive when he got on the field. The problem is that he was behind not only Mark Andrews, but also Nick Boyle. Nick Boyle blocked more than he caught passes. But in terms of just snaps played, Hayden Hurst was the third-string tight end of the Baltimore Ravens. But I think he's a talented player who now is going to a place that honestly needs targets to throw to. So do I think he's Austin Hooper? I don't. But I certainly think if we talk about sort of stock up or stock down, Hayden Hurst stock way up, and I think he's an interesting, you know, fantasy sleeper, tight end two. You know, I haven't done my ranks yet, but I would think he's going to slot in somewhere in the tight end 15 range for me, somewhere in there, like a tight end two with some upside.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I think the upside part is a really important part there. Just really talented. I think that sometimes circumstances dictate your production, and Mark Andrews was awesome for the Ravens. Nick Boyle really emerged, not just as a, he's always been a great blocker, but I just feel like this was about as crowded of a tight end room as he could have been in Baltimore. So I'm with you. It's hard for us to find tight ends to be excited about in a lot of cases, but this might be one where going to Atlanta and being Matt Ryan's safety valve is about as good of a spot for him to wind up in. But that's not the only news regarding the Falcons that has some fantasy relevance as Devontae.
By the way, Field, I'm going to interrupt you here for a second just because people are watching this on the, I think I follow you on the gram, you know, at Field Yates. And yeah. Of course, I follow your lovely wife, Chapin, on the gram as well, at Chapin Yates. And so I think I noticed one of you guys posting that you're getting a dog soon.
We are getting a dog. We're getting a dog in three and a half weeks. We can't wait.
Yeah, no, it's going to be awesome. Dogs are amazing, except when you're trying to tape a podcast at home. Cooper is like seeing like squirrels or something and rabbits. And like I have to either ignore him and listen to him scratching at the door or right. Let him in and out. So I apologize to anyone that's watching this on the YouTube. I understand it's called the YouTube. I was corrected by that. I found that out a couple of days ago. So anyone watching us here on the YouTube, apologies for that as we walk around and try to let Cooper out. One stat here that Thirsty Kyle sent along about Hayden Hurst, 7th among tight ends in yards per target last year. So again, super small sample size, didn't get on the field a lot, but when he got the ball, when he was doing, you know, Hayden Hurst could produce. My hope there for you, Field, and Chapin, whatever your dog's name is and whatever dog you get, I hope that it's just not nearly annoying as Cooper has decided to be during this podcast. He's like, Cooper's like the chillest dog ever who hangs out, like he's been sleeping all day. And then today, all of a sudden, he's going nuts at the door. And
as it pertains to dogs' energies on podcasts. So Matthew, let's keep it rolling. Yes, the Falcons. The Falcons did release Devontae Freeman, and they kept Brian Hill, along with Ito Smith, who was still under contract. This strikes me, Matthew, by the way, is like, this is an obvious add a running back spot, right? I mean, I just can't imagine Brian Hill and Ito Smith being the top two backs for the Falcons going into next season.
Yeah, they will do something. Whether they draft somebody, whether they sign a free agent, they're not going in. I do not believe the Atlanta Falcons are going into next season with Brian Hill and Ito Smith as their lead guys. I just don't. You know, they will sign somebody.
Totally agree. I feel the same way. And I feel like we can almost like hold our analysis further on the Falcons running backs because there's just no way. I mean, whether it's a running back in the draft or whether it's somebody in the second wave of free agency, this feels like a team that's going to be in the market for a back at some point relatively soon. So let's keep it moving and go to the
Atlanta real quickly. I'm trying to calm my dog down here. Before we move off of Atlanta, one thing I will say is just again, we talk about sort of stock up and stock down. Again, so no Devontae Freeman, Austin Hooper moves on. Yes, you've got Hayden Hurst, but how about Calvin Ridley? Just in terms of stock up, stock down. Think about Calvin Ridley last year. He's got, for his career, Calvin Ridley, 8 career games with 8 or more targets. In those 8 games, he's averaging 24.2 fantasy points per game, which would have been wide receiver 2 last year. And I'm not saying he's going to be a top 2 fantasy wide receiver, but Calvin Ridley suddenly, I don't expect Hayden Hurst to get 96 targets the way Austin Hooper did. And so to me, Calvin Ridley, another year in the NFL, I think, he's going to be a trendy sleeper next year and should be, I think, fantasy stock up for Calvin Ridley with all the moves going on in Atlanta.
No argument here on that. Let's go to Carolina, where Cam Newton has not yet been released, not yet been traded, but he's on the out. The team has granted him permission to request it or to find a trade. Cam disputed that. That part is a different conversation for a different platform, but they have signed Teddy Bridgewater, Matthew. I'm not quite sure what to make of the Panthers so far this offseason. They seem to be making some moves that suggest they're going into a tank. They make other moves that seem to suggest they're trying to win or stay competitive right now. Teddy Bridgewater, cracked the fantasy radar at all?
I guess, again, if you want to sort of talk about stock up, stock down, it's stock up because Teddy Bridgewater has a starting gig. Yes. And, you know, I mean, as of last year, you know, he filled in obviously when Drew Brees was hurt, but otherwise he was a backup last year. So his fantasy stock has improved. And, you know, as we've talked about before, per our colleague Mike Clay and our friend Prison Mike over there, he averaged 6.1 air yards per throw in 2019. This is Teddy Bridgewater. That was lowest in the NFL. So we can expect a lot of dump offs to Christian McCaffrey. look, I don't know that Teddy Bridgewater is somebody that you're going to want to build your draft team around, that you're going to want to draft. But do I think there's some, you know, bye week fill in, deep league, two quarterback appeal to Teddy Bridgewater? I sort of do, right? Yeah. Because I think here's why. They're going to be bad. I know you're saying, like, maybe they're sort of trying, maybe they're tanking. They're going to be bad. This is going to be a bad defense. They're going to have to be throwing. Kyle Allen was useful at various times last year. And so Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, Ian Thomas, now that Greg Olsen is in Seattle, there's suddenly like a decent amount of Cooper's burying himself here in the pillow. There's suddenly a decent amount of, I think there's a decent amount of offensive weapons around Teddy Bridgewater. And I think they're going to be bad in throwing. So do I think he could provide top 20 quarterback fantasy numbers? I do.
Okay, that's fine. Top 20, that's fine. But I don't consider him a quarterback that I'm going to be drafting as my starter going into a league.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Phillip Rivers, though.
Deep league, like you and I play in it. We talked about this yesterday. You and I play in a 16-team league. I believe Teddy Bridgewater will be drafted in that league.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I mean, a lot of quarterbacks get drafted in that league. To your point, though, not a guy we're preparing to have as our starter going into the season. Phillip Rivers is very interesting, Matthew. Although Penn is not yet to paper as we're having this conversation, he's headed to the Indianapolis Colts. He reunites with Frank Reich. Nick Sirianni as former offensive coordinator when the Chargers still played in San Diego. He now goes to Indy where they have some weapons. T.Y. Hilton is a stud, but they still got to fortify that wide receiver group more. Can Phillip Rivers re-enter the fantasy radar after a down season this past year?
Boy, that's a good one. Maybe. Can I punt on this one and say maybe? Okay. If I have to make a call now, I'm going to say no. To your point, same thing about Tom Brady, right? Is that, like, so he doesn't run. He doesn't run. Phillip Rivers doesn't. Like, no, listen. Phillip Rivers is 4,000 yards in the bank, right? Seven straight seasons of 4,000 yards. But. And it's going to be a very good offensive line in Indianapolis. But I would argue that T.Y. Hilton, Jack Doyle, Zach Pascal, Paris Campbell, while they're nice pieces, it's not nearly as much of a group of weapons as Keenan Allen and Hunter Henry and Mike Williams and Austin Eckler and Melvin Gordon. I don't know. I think Phillip Rivers is a better NFL move and a better move for the Colts as a franchise than I think a top 12 fantasy asset. To me, he's going to be like, he's a mid-tier QB2, a kind of like a, okay, you know, like a Kirk Cousins type, right? Like just, you know, just sort of like, he's going to be, in my initial ranks, I think he will somewhere be in that 15 to 20 range.
Yeah, I feel the same way there. Just a reminder, since 2014, Phillip Rivers has been a top 10 quarterback in terms of total points just once. That was 2017. So a lot of things got to go right. I like the move for real football, a little bit less bullish in terms of fantasy. The Dolphins had a gaping hole in their backfield last year, Matthew. Ryan Fitzpatrick, that's right. Ryan Fitzpatrick led them in rushing yards last season. Jordan Howard is friend of the podcast, not only that, but also now a Miami Dolphin, a two-year deal worth north of $10 million, according to Shefty. Maybe this isn't the most impactful signing in terms of overall NFL impact, but this feels like one that's got a lot of fantasy relevance, Matthew.
I agree because, look, what we talk about with fantasy, right? It's talent plus opportunity. Jordan Howard is talented. Now, he may be a little bit one-dimensional. He hasn't really used in the passing game that much, but Jordan Howard is a talented NFL player. You know, he has last year 7 touchdowns in, I believe, 10 games. 9 touchdowns each of the previous 2 years with the Bears. Like, this is a guy that plays well, averages over 4.5, about 4.5 yards a carry. Like, he's been a good, productive player, and the opportunity certainly is wide open in Miami, to your point. Whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick or somebody else under center for the Dolphins this year, they have no one in the backfield. They feel pretty, you know, look, it's a rebuilding team, but the opportunity is there for Jordan Howard, who will once again, because people will think Miami can't run the ball and they're going to be bad and they're going to be trailing and he's a guy that can't pass the catch. And Jordan Howard is just, he's not like a sexy, exciting player. But we're going to look up a year from now and Jordan Howard's going to have 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns, something like that, 8 to 10 touchdowns.
Another one that I want to see what other shoes potentially drop in Miami, because I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to add to that backfield. But for right now, he's sitting pretty as a player that should see something close to 15 or 18 carries per game. Not totally involved in the passing game, but perhaps that picks up a little bit because, again, they're so thin in the backfield. The other side of that, Matthew, is that now Philadelphia is prepared, I would think, to commit to Miles Sanders. He was great down the stretch last year. We all know how impactful he was when they made their late run of the playoffs. Do we think that Miles Sanders has like top 10 running back upside going into his sophomore season?
I certainly see the argument. And I'm going to be on the – and I believe I will be on the wrong side – not – I'm not going to be on the wrong side of this. I'm going to be on the unpopular side of this because okay. I'm going to say no.
I don't know if it's unpopular. I think it's pragmatic.
I think a lot of people are going to look at the six games without Jordan Howard last year, and they're going to talk about the fact this is a guy that got over almost 20 touches a game. He averaged over 100 scrimmage yards per game. He averaged 18.8 fantasy points per game. You know, so he was great in that six-game stretch without Jordan Howard.
Yep.
Having said that, and I put this in my combine column, and look, I didn't get everything right in my combine column. Yes, Tom Brady to Tampa Bay, I got right, but I also said I didn't think Rivers was going to Indy. I got that dead wrong. So I'm certainly not infallible, but the sense that I got from talking to people around the Eagles organization, and certainly history would suggest it as well, is that they don't believe Miles Sanders can be the every-down guy. They want a multi-running back approach, which certainly, by the way, has been Doug Peterson's MO since he came to Philadelphia. He has always had a multiple running back approach. Do I think Miles Sanders has the most fantasy points of any running back in Philadelphia next year, barring injury? I do. Do I think he's the guy that's going to get drafted highest and the guy you want? Yes. But do I think he's a top 10 fantasy running back? I don't, because I still think that they are going to use multiple backs. We saw nice things out of Boston Scott last year as well. I think he'll be in the mix. I think they add somebody, whether it's a draft or a free agent. I think it'll once again be a running back by committee. And again, talking to people around the team, that was the sense I got, that they liked what they saw out of Sanders last year, but I don't think they're ready to fully commit to him as the guy. And you also have to remember last year when Sanders was getting all this work, they were down to nobody. Remember, why am I blanking on the guy's name? Huh?
Boston Scott?
No. But like they who is it? Was it Greg Ward?
Greg Ward,
wide receiver. Yeah. Like their best, yeah. Like all the receivers were hurt. Zach Ertz got banged up as well. Like they had no one to touch the ball in Philadelphia. And so I think in a team where everyone's fully healthy, I don't think Miles Sanders gets 20 touches a game.
Fair on that. I agree with you there, Matthew. Let's go to the Bears, who now have a new quarterback as Nick Foles has been traded there from Jacksonville. Excuse me. We'll leave the Foles conversation out for right now because it sounds like there's at least a possibility it's going to be a competition to win that starting job. I'm of the mind that Foles will win that job, but Jimmy Graham was also added to the mix, Matthew. He keeps on collecting those checks, but are we past the point of Jimmy Graham's fantasy days? Like, I know it's a big name, but does this even move the needle at all?
No.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Very quickly, this is a guy who was tight end 32 on a points per game last year. Tight end 32 on a points per game basis last year.
Yeah.
He had one game with more than four catches last year. He had only three games with more than 50 yards receiving last year. And whether it's Nick Foles or Mitchell Trubisky under center for the Bears this year, either way, I don't think I'm saying too much of an insult here to say that either guy is not nearly as good as Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, or Drew Brees, the three quarterbacks Jimmy Graham has played with throughout his NFL career. So Jimmy Graham, whose production has gone down each of the last four seasons, now has to play at, what is he, 33 years old, 34?
Something like that.
So, you know, in his early 30s, you know, on a downward trend, he's going to play with the worst quarterback of his career. So he's a big name. Kudos to his agent, whoever it is, for getting him that. Who?
Jimmy Sexton, baby.
Jimmy Sexton, hats off to you for getting that kind of deal for Jimmy Graham, man. Like, if you ever want to represent a fantasy guy, give me a call, Jimmy Sexton. I'm in. But listen, fantasy-wise, no, that's a – I'm ignoring Jimmy Graham this year.
So let's rip through a few players that are staying home. so to speak, and just initial thoughts, understanding things could change. Damian Williams had his option picked up by the Chiefs. Matthew, wouldn't surprise me if the Chiefs go shopping for a running back, though, elsewhere. Williams was obviously great in the Super Bowl, but this felt like a vulnerable position for them late last season.
I think just because of the injury history of Williams, and I think they'll want some depth. They didn't love the depth they had last year. Darwin Thompson, they never felt fully comfortable with. LeSean McCoy, obviously, I don't think they felt like he had enough tread left on the tires. I agree with you, but I do think, similar to what I said with Miles Sanders, do I think Damian Williams is a top 10 running back? I don't. But do I think he's the Chiefs running back you want? Do I think he's the guy, the running back on the Chiefs barring injury that has the most fantasy points at the end of next year? I do. Or the end of this upcoming season? I do. Again, we haven't been able to see it over a full season, but Damian Williams has 9 career games, including the playoffs, where he's gotten 15 or more touches, and the guy averages 24 fantasy points per game. Like, he was great in the playoffs. He obviously was great in the Super Bowl. He should have been the Super Bowl MVP. And so we've said it for years. If you can be the starting running back for Andy Reid, you're going to put up fantasy points.
Yeah, I feel the same way as well there. Let's see if they add anybody else. A.J. Green did not play at all last year. We know it was a bizarre ankle situation where it felt like he was going to come back, and then he didn't. And then he felt like he was going to come back again. He did not. He never played at all. He got the franchise tag, Matthew. He's still in Cincinnati. You got to figure he has a new quarterback with Joe Burrow as the presumptive number one pick in the draft. Can you be excited and feel like you might have a top 10 wide receiver if you do select A.J. Green this upcoming year?
He certainly has the talent, and we'll see what Joe Burrow does. But the Cincinnati Bengals offense is actually sort of interesting this year, right? Now, you have to assume A.J. Green's healthy. But we saw sparks and flashes from John Ross last year. We saw splashes from Auden Tate. We know Tyler Boyd is a nice player. Now you add A.J. Green, Joe Mixon in the backfield, hopefully an improved offensive line. Joe Burrow suddenly becomes kind of interesting this year, and that Bengals offense as a whole, I think, will be better. I'm okay taking a flyer on A.J. Green because I think people will be so burned on him because he's struggled so much recently staying healthy. My guess is he's going to be going in the 6th, 7th round. People are going to be so out on A.J. Green because of the injury history, rookie quarterback at Cincinnati. They have, you know, they have short memories and they think Cincinnati's so bad. And make no mistake, the Bengals were awful last year. But the Bengals have actually made the playoffs 6 out of the last 10 years. Like, this is a franchise that has had success more recently than a lot of the other quote-unquote rebuilding teams. And so I guess I just don't think it's a franchise that's as – far away as people think, at least as we care about it in fantasy. I think A.J. Green's going to be an interesting flyer next year because in every season he's played, he's always been a top 17 fantasy wide receiver.
All right, this is not really an analysis question. This is maybe just more an appreciation.
Do you agree or disagree with that?
No, I agree with you on A.J. Green. I think he is one of those players where the talent and the opportunity to bounce back, and especially if he gets a long-term deal done, because I know that weighs on a player's mind when he's in that final year of his deal like he was last year. If he gets a long-term contract, then it's you don't have to worry about the possibility of injuries being strung out, things like that. I think that A.J. Green could be back for in a major way with Joe Burrow under center and should not be a player or will not be a player that people are overreaching for. So last couple here, Matthew. Derrick Henry, again, he gets the franchise tag. Really, it's an appreciation, right? I mean, like, Derrick Henry was incredible last year. You love him this year. He's Derrick Henry.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, top 5 fantasy running back, you know, solved the – Cooper, you're killing me over here. I swear to God. Cooper, you're going to get the podcast again. Like, Cooper, what – he really – this is – he's like – literally, he has been sleeping all day, and now all of a sudden he's got all sorts of energy here at, like, 6 o'clock in the afternoon.
Which is nice.
So, anyway, yeah, I mean, there's not much needs to be said. I think if you are a Derrick Henry fantasy manager in Dynasty or a keeper league or somebody who's looking to draft him this year, you're excited about the fact that not only do they franchise tag him, they're going to pay him a lot of money, once again, making the focal point of the offense, right? But they also brought back Ryan Tannehill. To me, sure. I think oh, my goodness.
Good boy. Good boy, so, Cooper.
Oh, what are you going to do? I apologize to Jonathan Luna and our entire video team that are trying to make a show out of this thing. Mm-hmm. There you go. Look, this is what's going on. Look, he's like the Titans with Derrick Henry. Not letting them get away. Anyway, whatever. Yes, Derrick Henry is going to be a first round pick this year, no matter what. He solved the concerns going into last year that he wasn't really involved in the passing game. The usage is so massive, still a young player. Great news for the Titans and for Derrick Henry's fantasy prospects. Tighten up.
That's right. A couple more here. Matthew, the Cowboys kept their core together. Dak Prescott got the franchise tag, and Amari Cooper got paid to the effect of a 5-year.
Yeah. Did you like the fact that Amari Cooper turned down more money from the Redskins? Like, he didn't want to go to he was willing to take a pay cut to stay with the Cowboys as opposed to go to the Redskins.
No comment there. I can't imagine why I would ever do that. But yes, Amari Cooper stays with the Cowboys, same with Dak Prescott. Matthew, again, not analysis, it's just appreciation. Dak Prescott was phenomenal last year for fantasy football. He is one of those quarterbacks that both gets the job done with his legs and with his arm as well. Dak should be even better next year. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe the only question here, Matthew, would be if, and maybe this is a reach for a question, is there any change because of the the coaching change? Does that matter at all?
I don't think so. I guess we'll see. But, Kellen Moore is still there as the offense coordinator. And so my expectation is that because of the success, like the problems that the Cowboys had last year weren't Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper related.
Right.
There were other failings of the team, but I think – obviously, you franchise tag Dak Prescott, you give Amari Cooper $100 million. You're pretty happy with what they did for you last year and throughout their careers as Cowboys. So my expectation here is that Dak Prescott's a top 10 fantasy quarterback. Amari Cooper is a top 15 fantasy wide receiver. Both guys, legit fantasy stars this year. I expect more of the same as opposed to anything different from either guy. And, with Randall Cobb now moving on to Houston, I'm expecting a big year, another big jump from Michael Gallup, who I think is getting overlooked somewhat in some of the offseason conversations. I'm a big Michael Gallup fan.
One last thought or one last piece of news here, Matthew, is the other side of the Nick Foles trade. Gardner Minshew takes over as the starter in Jacksonville, or I guess regains his starting job. Minshew Mania will be my costume again for Halloween next year. He was solid as a starting quarterback last year for fantasy football purposes, at least for a good stretch. He kind of reminds me of what we've been talking about with Teddy Bridgewater and also Phillip Rivers. Not somebody you're going into the season with as your starter, but in a deep league, he'll be a bye week fill-in. I feel like I'll write about him plenty of times on the waiver wire column next year.
I would completely agree with it. I think he'll be relevant enough that you could dress up again as him for Halloween. So save your fake mustache.
Okay.
Maybe shave your legs. But other than that.
What?
I just posted a video on Twitter about that, about Gardner Minshew. Look, last year, over 16 or more fantasy points in 8 of the 12 games he started last year. More mobile than he gets credit for. 27 or more yards rushing in 8 of the 12 games he played last year. And you sort of think in terms of NFL terms from last year, he comes in like they were all in on Nick Foles last year, who got all the first team reps. And, Minshew comes in, he's a rookie, just trying to find the field, kind of a lost year for the Jaguars. And now he comes into the year knowing he's the guy. And I think that's important in the mindset of a quarterback. And I'm also excited about what the Jaguars did offensively in terms of their coaching staff. New quarterbacks coach Ben McAdoo, new offense coordinator Jay Gruden. Both guys traditionally throughout their NFL careers have liked to throw. And think about Jay Gruden. So I'm not going to count 2019 because Jay Gruden got fired 5 games into that season. So from 2011 to 2018, Jay Gruden was the offense coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, and then he was the head coach of the Washington Redskins. Eight full NFL seasons where he was the main play caller of an offense. And in those 8 NFL seasons, 5 of them, he had a top 13 fantasy quarterback. 3 years that he didn't. 2011, that was 2011, Andy Dalton's rookie year. Okay, whatever. 2014, that was the year that it was the RG3, Kirk Cousins back and forth year. They had to start Colt McCoy a couple of times as well in that year. That was kind of a lost season. His first year as head coach of the NFL, Snyder wanted RG3. Jay Gruden wanted Kirk Cousins. And then 2018, which was Alex Smith's year in Washington, and they ended up having to use 4 quarterbacks because of the injuries. They had Colt McCoy, they had Mark Sanchez for 2 games, they had Josh Johnson off his couch. So I don't know that you can count that year. So the 5 years where he basically had a guy, the five seasons that Jay Gruden had a guy from start to finish, that quarterback was QB 13 or better in terms of fantasy points per game. Yeah, give me some Gardner Minshew this year as kind of a fantasy sleeper, as a QB 2 who's going to be drafted way late or not at all, who can provide some bye week fill-in, some QB 2 production that's going to border on some QB 1, low-end QB 1 production in the right matchup.
All right, there you have it. Jay Gruden makes fantasy quarterbacks fun. I agree on that part. And Gardner Minshew and his mustache seem to be on track to be the full-time starter now in Jacksonville. There's plenty more news to come eventually. We think there's going to be some more movement with skill guys. Robbie Anderson still has to find a home. Melvin Gordon has to find a home. A lot of speculation about other movement around the league. So we'll be back at some point, probably in the same medium, because as you guys know, right now, we are limited in terms of our resources. As our globe, not just our country, but the entire world deals with the global pandemic of the coronavirus. We wish everybody continues to stay safe and do your best. Stay quarantined. Stay away from other people. Social distancing is our best chance to help flatten this curve. For Matthew, I am Field. We'll talk to you guys at some point soon.
And apologies for Cooper. Peace out.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.